Power User Podcast. I'm Kristen Hatcher, and hey, episode 10. What do you know? Joining me today are the usual suspects, Derek Batting of NeoWin.net, Tom Chick of Quarter2Three.com, and Brad Wardell of WinCustomize.com. Hello.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. Good
afternoon,
or good evening.
Depending on where you are, exactly. Okay. Episode 10.
Happy birthday.
Woot.
Yes, thanks. Thanks for joining us, Brad. I appreciate it.
What are we supposed to get each other on our 10th anniversary? Is this paper or wood?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's tax time here at the office, and so I've just got my tax bill for the year. And
I see.
Boy, a pain.
You're a little distracted then? Is that what it is?
Oh, more like shell-shocked.
Oh, I see. You're not going to cry on us, are you?
I'll try not to.
Okay.
And this week, Brad cries.
Right. Yeah. Again. No, just kidding.
Again.
All right. Our first topic this week, and fairly big news, I think, at least for those people who are interested in 3D software, Autodesk acquires Alias. So how much do you think it costs when one popular 3D software maker wants to acquire the other popular 3D software maker?
I don't know, at least $200.
at least. Almost as much as your tax bill, right, Brad?
Yeah. Watch it.
Yeah. So Autodesk, the maker of 3D Studio Max, has acquired Alias, which makes Maya, for $182 million in cash. Can you believe it? Brad, do you want to fill us in on the details?
Well, essentially, most games, for example, use either Maya or 3D Studio Max for all their in-game models. And as we discussed previously here on Power User TV, that in the future, 3D modeling is going to be huge because Windows itself is moving to a 3D system. So applications and other user interface designs and other content are going to be more and more done with 3D models, which are created primarily in those two programs. And not just there. I mean, movies and television shows, when you're watching Stargate or Battlestar Galactica, that's typically done with one of those two programs. And so I think a lot of concern that we have, I know at around the office here that people are freaked out about, is that these programs used to cost like $10,000 a seat, and I think the higher-end versions still cost way more than that. And, I mean, even the entry-level ones were thousands of dollars, but because of competition between the two of them, the price had come down. Well, now Autodesk owns both Maya and 3D Studio Max, and who knows what's going to happen to the pricing. I noticed that on their site when they had all these FAQs about the auction, or I mean, the, not the auction.
It was auction, was it?
It wasn't, yeah. About the acquisition,
yes.
That they didn't talk about, will the price of these products be changing? Because that's what I'd like to know. Are we going to be paying $10,000 a seat to use 3D Studio in another year?
Yeah, that's definitely something of concern for somebody like yourself who makes video games. So we'll just cross our fingers and hope.
Well, look at independent developers. I mean, to us, I mean, 10,000, you have five artists, let's say, and you want five. If it's going to cost $50,000 just to buy the software, that's a huge hit to a small company.
Are there no alternatives to those tools?
There are minor players in it. I mean, there's Softimage, I believe. I'm not a 3D modeler, but there's a few programs, but I don't think there's any in the sync level as those programs. And more to the point, a lot of the value in a 3D modeler comes in how well they've mastered these programs. These programs are not like Word and Excel, where you take a class and then be all up to date with them in a few weeks. I mean, they're pretty intense programs to master. And so the idea, I'm sure for a lot of people, especially who have a lot of content already made with them, switching to something else becomes really problematic.
Right.
But this hopefully market forces will take care of everything. Oh, God, what am I saying?
It could happen. You never know. Okay, thank you, Brad. I'm a little out of it this week. I'm about to go on a trade show starting on Sunday night, so I've got no good segues prepared here. Sorry. Not that that was ever my strong suit.
Just have a gruff Bronx accent, segue to next item.
Right. Exactly. Next. Okay. Sun and Google have a bit of a partnership here. Some people are saying that Google is declaring war on Microsoft, battling them in one of their biggest markets. And some people are saying that Sun is using Google's leverage to shore up their dying company. And some people are just saying, who cares? So Google and Sun have agreed on a multi-year partnership where they're agreeing to distribute each other's software. They're finding ways to make it easier for consumers to get Java's runtime and the OpenOffice productivity suite and the Google toolbar. And Sun can use Google's leverage to gain greater access to the marketplace, and Google is now free to create applications based on Sun's technology, which could, and, you know, through that, could theoretically begin to challenge Microsoft's dominance of the Office-type software. But I guess not everybody's impressed by the announcement.
Well, there's a lot more to it than just bundling a toolbar with Java and vice versa. The way it is now, one part of the CNET FAQ about the whole deal says, with Solaris, OpenOffice, Java, and open source software, is there anything in the partnership that isn't aimed directly at Microsoft? And the answer is not really, because Java competes with Microsoft's .NET and Windows, OpenOffice competes with Microsoft Office, Solaris competes with Windows, and the Google Toolbar provides access to Google Online and services that compete with Microsoft MSN. So basically, it could be considered an assault on Microsoft all the way around.
That could be. Some of the people who tend to comment on these things, for example, Om Malik of Business 2.0 said the Google Sun announcement in the end turned out to be nothing, or as someone just said on the instant message, let's do something useless so we can say we did something so Sun can get some press because they're dying slowly, which is harsh but true, given all the speculation, which was nothing more than the chatter, then chatter of the worst kind. He says, all of us are looking for shapes and shadows, including me.
Well, Sun just also had a $2 billion shot in the arm from Microsoft for settling the lawsuit. So that breathed a bit more financial life into them, now partnering up with Google to distribute their software, hopefully more. And this also leaves Google open to pursue all the other speculations you hear about a Google operating system and a Google browser and Google services and Office, you know, web-based Office service, et cetera, et cetera. This could all possibly be the groundwork for all of those things.
It could be. That is true.
Yeah, so when you look at it like bundling Java with a toolbar, yeah, indeed, big deal.
You know,
why bloat either one of them any more than you have to? You can get them both independently, and that really is no big deal. But I think the no big deal part is what a lot of the bloggers are concentrating on now, and they're not seeing the forest for the trees. What could this partnership potentially lead to? It could be huge. It could just be a toolbar and Java.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Doesn't it sometimes seem like Microsoft creates its own competitors?
Yeah.
It's like Google didn't have to be Microsoft's arch nemesis or anything. It's like Microsoft decided, you know, our next target, is there anyone else in technology that looks like they're doing well at all? And that isn't completely under our thumb. Oh, look, there's a search engine. We must find a way to crush them, even though for just – it's almost – you know, when we were in the OS2 market, we used to make a joke that the difference between IBM and Microsoft is that if IBM accidentally would run over a turtle that was on the side of the road, it was because they were probably drunk. You know, they accidentally swerved off the road. Whereas Microsoft would be driving along and say, hey, look, there's a turtle on the side of the road. And, you know, squash it. And I tell you, this whole Google Microsoft thing seems to me, as an outsider, so manufactured. So Microsoft being crazy paranoid and saying, "Oh, look, someone's actually making money in technology, and it's not us." I mean, we're already super rich, but there's someone else actually doing something. Let's find ways to compete with them. And then, as a result, Google effectively, it feels like they have to respond, that they have to protect themselves, and now Microsoft is essentially creating their own competitor.
The way these articles read, it's not so much that Google was looking for something to do. It was more like Sun went to Google and said, hey, what do you say? This all came out from a Sun engineer's, you know, brainchild to get Sun and Google together. And it was pursued by Sun employees, not by Google.
Well, I know. I'm not talking about this case in particular. It's just, if you look at the overall thing, that, you know, whether it be Steve Ballmer being upset because someone's going over to Google or whatever, clearly Microsoft views Google as an arch competitor, and you can just see the forces going around Google slowly turning Google into a answer to Microsoft.
Right.
Even though it didn't have to be that way.
You're right. I agree with that.
That is true. Any other comments on this article or on this topic?
Tom?
No. This is all geek to me.
We'll let Tom stay out
Bueller,
of this one.
Bueller?
Right. Well, speaking of people who make mountains out of molehills, although I perhaps shouldn't, you know, pass judgment this early in the story, the Delaware Supreme Court has decided not to unmask a blogger who's made some unflattering comments about a local council person in Smyrna, Delaware. So this blogger made comments on his own blog about Patrick Cahill, who is a councilman from Smyrna. He said that Cahill was divisive and had an obvious mental deterioration. And later he said that Cahill is as paranoid as everyone in the town thinks he is. So Cahill went and got a court order. The publisher of the blog was required to tell him that the web address of the blogger said he was a customer of Comcast, right? So Cahill then went to Comcast and demanded this person's identity. And Comcast notified the blogger, as required by law, and the blogger filed for a protective order. And the a lower court judge denied the order, and the blogger then appealed it. So it went to the Delaware Supreme Court, and the Delaware Supreme Court granted the protective order, saying that Cahill was provided the same means of communication as the blogger, meaning that he would have been able to respond instantly to the accusations made by the blogger, and therefore would have been able to respond to the same audience. And therefore, it was not defamation of character.
I don't know. When I'm online, whether I be on Neowin or Wing Customize or Quarter 3, you know, the one universal thing is I'm in a flame war somewhere at some time. And every time I post, though, I'm always mindful that whatever I say could someday be thrown in my face in a court record. And so the attorneys who cringe when I post sometimes some of the things I do. Anyone who knows, seen Frogboyer/Dragon on any of these sites in some flame war, you'll never see me do one of three things. One, I will never call someone a criminal. Two, I will never say that someone, I will never try to do anything intentionally to damage them economically. And number three, I will never say that I think someone is insane/mentally deficient, because those three things are libel and are not protected under the First Amendment. And if you say those things, generally speaking, it's a close call, because this blogger essentially published libel. I mean, almost a textbook libel. I mean, he actually said mentally deterioration, which is like right under libel, under the examples of libel would be saying that someone has mental deterioration.
Right. Well, the blogger's
mental
lawyer.
Deficiency. You can't call someone mentally deficient as in an idiot.
Well, no, that's not the same thing. Actually, trying to make it sound like that they are clinically mentally insane or mentally—that's where it gets iffy. The mentally deterioration makes it sound like that he is saying that this person actually has some sort of mental condition, as opposed to someone who's just trying to
Who's just not smart.
An ad hominem personal attack is actually okay. But if I go, if I say, Tom, you know, Your one-star review on all of our products, you're just a moron, right? We can actually say that. But if we say...
That's okay.
Yeah, that's actually okay.
But you can't accuse me of having ADD, for instance.
Right, but I say, Tom, the reason why you gave us one star is because you have because you are obviously mentally insane, and I think the world knows that. You could sue us, now that we've recorded that.
Thank you. I'll be calling my lawyer.
Right. Yeah. Well, Christmas for Tom.
Right. Well, the blogger's lawyer made a statement saying that statements on an electronic bulletin board with hyperbole and profanity are generally not considered as credible sources of facts, essentially saying that people who blog are basically blogging about their opinions. And in general, he's saying people understand this.
Yeah, but it didn't sound like he was giving his opinion. He sounded like he was trying to say, this person has a mental,
he said an
mental
obvious,
illness.
He said an obvious mental deterioration.
Right. Now, I think this councilman needs to get a thicker skin. I mean, you know how many times a day I get told I have an obvious mental... it's kind of funny that we're having this podcast today. I mean, just today I'm getting all kinds of stuff like this over on Neowin.
Right.
So, you got guys like, on the one hand, he probably has a case. On the other hand, the councilman needs to grow up, get a thicker skin, and deal with it. Welcome to the internet.
Yeah. Well, That is true, but not everybody has had a chance to get flamed for saying, I don't know what, for just doing their job, I guess, in the case of the councilmen. And, you know, politicians are generally unpopular with some portion of the population. However, I don't know, I mean, I understand what you're saying about libel, but I can't imagine this holding up in court. If, in fact, Cahill was to find out who this person was and to take him to court, I can just see the first question being asked of the blogger is, do you have a medical background, and do you have a background in psychology or even in education or anything, so to where you can actually diagnose somebody with an obvious mental deterioration? If I can't imagine... Maybe he does. Who knows? Maybe Cahill actually does have some kind of mental problem, which is why he's upset about it. Who knows? But I don't see this blogger getting into any kind of trouble, serious trouble, for making a statement that was basically opinion. I mean,
right.
This sounds like
this is something that just has to shake out through the legal system.
Right.
And it's still in flux. We'll see where it goes. But I sort of agree with your lack of concern, Kristen.
Right. Well, in that... I have heard many, many, many people say, you know, out loud and in writing on the internet that George Bush has an obvious mental deficiency or words of that nature.
Well, that's a proven fact.
So I don't see, you know, the government going after all of these people, and it's because it comes down to, let's all say it together, freedom of speech.
Oh, right. That one, yeah.
That one, right. That little one, yeah. It's a small thing. So I understand what you're saying, Brad, about suggesting that you have some sort of knowledge about a person's, say, medical history or, you know, psychological history.
I think what the courts usually rule on is whether will someone's charge be taken seriously. And I think his attorney is saying, look, it's on a blog by some guy. No one's going to take it seriously. Therefore, it does not rise to the level of true libel. And that's, you know, for the courts to decide. But like I said, this councilman, you know, hey, guess what? Politicians, bad things get said about politicians. Just ask our smirking monkey president, you know, if you don't, I'd say that as someone who voted for the guy. Yeah. We just lost 25% of our listeners.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But still, politicians, mean things get said.
That is true. I think the bottom line is this, yes, this councilman needs to get a thicker skin. The interesting part to me here, actually, is that the Delaware Supreme Court is saying that, as far as they know, apparently, their decision was the first time any state or federal Supreme Court has ruled on the rights of anonymous bloggers.
So it could set a precedent that could potentially make it all the way up to the federal Supreme Court.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah, we'll hear what John Roberts has to say about this.
Right, yes. And who else might be appointed to the Supreme Court?
Harriet Myers. We'll get her to weigh in.
Yeah, we'll see what she has to say. But enough of that stuff. Who wants to talk about that stuff anymore? I mean, no,
I'm looking forward to hearing this segue.
The Halo movie. That's what I think is important in the world today.
It's a good segue for someone who's going to a trade show on Sunday.
Exactly. Yeah, for somebody whose brain is elsewhere, I have to say. Of course, that's my general state of being, though, that my brain is elsewhere. So Peter Jackson is going to produce the Halo movie.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think this could be a very good thing, actually,
so
for the Halo movie. So Peter and his wife, Fran, are going to executive produce the movie. No director or cast yet.
Bungie brought on Peter Jackson and his wife/business partner, Fran Walsh, and they'll both be executive producing the film. And they'll be utilizing Jackson's production facilities in New Zealand. Weta, who did practically everything for the Lord of the Rings movies. So Weta's also going to be handling everything from fabricating Covenant weapons to building life-size Forerunner structures to accomplishing shot after shot of complex live action and CG integration. They're going to do it all. So we know they can handle large-scale battle sequences, and Peter Jackson's already got experience with zombies and, you know, all that kind of thing, you know, the whole nine yards.
I also have experience with zombies, but it's in a whole different arena.
Speaking of zombies, Alex Garland is the novelist who wrote the screenplay. He also did 28 Days Later.
Ah, interesting.
And The Beach and some other things. So they've got some seriously heavy hitters on board.
Yeah.
Now they just have to bring on a director and a good cast. Yeah.
Right. The minor things, yeah.
But people are already thinking, well, if The Rock is in Doom, then that means Vin Diesel's going to have to be in Halo. And there's all the speculation on Internet Movie Database about who's doing what.
Right.
This has been an interesting journey for Microsoft and Bungie as far as bringing their coveted property to the screen. And watching it develop has certainly been... as I said, interesting. They began, maybe this was 6 months ago, by basically hiring Garland to write this script. He was reportedly paid $1 million, and Garland became something of a darling among geeks after the success of 28 Days Later. So they hired him to write the script, and then they shopped the script around Hollywood to various studios with some pretty high demands in terms of how much money they wanted and how much creative control they wanted. And pretty much everyone passed until the numbers came down. And what they eventually came up with was they wanted to sell it for $10 million or 15% of the gross, whichever was higher. And the final agreement was 20th Century and Fox sort of went in together and gave them either $5 million or 10% of the gross. So I think Microsoft was a little bit humbled initially in the process. But what they did get was, I mean, the fact that a man of Peter Jackson's caliber is involved. This is a very encouraging sign. But I personally will remain skeptical until we see, namely, a director. I'm not that concerned about a cast. Actually, a cast will be. If they do announce something like Vin Diesel, it'll be a very clear indication it's going to be a certain type of movie. So that will say a lot. But the reason I'm skeptical is I have never felt that Halo is much of a story, frankly. It's a great shooter, an amazing game, and it's done phenomenally well. It's justified in how well it's done. But as far as storytelling, Bungie has never impressed me that much. It's always seemed a little muddled, overambitious. I think you can ask 10 people who've played through the game what the story is, and you'll be lucky to get one or two of them who can relate some of the complexities about this AI in a ship, and this guy in a costume, and the Covenant, and these zombies, and this sort of Ringworld thing ripped off from Larry Niven. I mean, how does all of that tie together? The second game, Halo 2, didn't even have an ending. They just sort of stopped making it halfway through the story and put this sort of to-be-continued cliffhanger after introducing some weird sentient giant plant. It's all very confused. And I just hope that Alex Garland's script makes more sense of it than Bungie's game. But it is encouraging to see someone of Peter Jackson's caliber involved.
Yes, it is. And Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh obviously also understand storytelling. So hopefully that they can take these seeds that made it a fun game and turn it into a good movie. Whether or not the movie actually resembles Halo very much, is, you know, except in names of characters, is probably yet to be seen. But hopefully they can take it.
One of the early things that Microsoft was asking for is they wanted Bungie to have complete creative control over the process.
Cool.
And game developers have these huge, what are called Bibles about their universes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was actually part of the deal.
Good. Game developers, because I can assure you they do not.
Right. But that's not necessarily the stuff that makes a good movie, though.
Right, exactly. The storytelling elements are completely different.
Exactly, yeah. And I also think another question mark here is, we don't know what kind of movie it is, because we've never seen a movie that only says produced by Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson has produced the movies that he has written or directed, but it doesn't really mean anything to have produced by Peter Jackson on a movie at this point. What means something is to have directed by Peter Jackson on a movie, and unfortunately we don't have that yet. So good development overall, but I'm in a very wait-to-see mode. I'm just not convinced that games make good movies, and I'm not convinced that Halo is the kind of game that would make a good movie.
Yeah, I think you're right, Tom. Certainly if you just lift the story directly out of a game and make it into a movie, it's generally not going to work out. So as long as we have somebody who understands, you know, the 3-act structure and character growth and all those little things that go into making up a good story, that we'll see. But we should fly you out here when the movie comes out, so we can
see it
together.
See Halo. It is worth noting, though, that Bungie did publish, they helped publish some Halo novels, And I read the first one, and I did enjoy it. It seemed to have very little to do with the game. It was a sort of completely different genre, and I don't know what the other two novels were like. That's also encouraging that Bungie, while retaining creative control, is capable of creating a good narrative and letting someone else do it. So I think the novels are actually a more hopeful sign than anything that we know for sure about the Halo movie at this point.
Well, good. Excellent. So there's hope.
There is hope, yes. Horizon. Maybe a good video game movie on the horizon. We'll see.
Excellent. Well, Tom, what else? What do you know about other games that are coming out for the Xbox, particularly the Xbox 360? I understand Microsoft recently revealed their lineup.
that's sort of what I think people would like to think. Microsoft didn't reveal their they didn't reveal their launch lineup, which was a source of confusion. They have a show in Amsterdam called X05, and they were showing a lot of titles that they certainly allowed people to get confused about and think that these were launch titles, when in fact they were not. IGN, I think, put up a release saying these are launch titles. I think even their own internal, their Xbox.com website announced that these were launch titles. And later in the day, it became clear these, in fact, were not launch titles. Some of them were more than a year out. So
They're teasing us.
They're either teasing us, or it speaks volumes about the fact that they had the announcement in Amsterdam and there was some resulting confusion. I can only imagine what might have caused in that city. Don't want to libel anyone. I don't know if that's covered under the rules there. But right now, though, what we do know about it, in the confusion, some things were clarified. And what we do know is that there will be 15 to 20 titles available on launch day, with another maybe half dozen dribbling out over the course of the next few weeks to try to get in before Christmas. And, of course, there's a lot of good stuff in store beyond that. But the only confirmed launch titles are, Perfect Dark Zero, sort of a flagship shooter that they have from a company called Rare, and a sort of an RPG adventure thing called Cameo. It's two racing games, Project Gotham Racing 3 and Need for Speed Most Wanted, and then a bunch of sports things, Madden, NBA Live, Tiger Woods, and FIFA. Those are the only confirmed titles that will be available at launch day, and right now we're in a sort of wait-and-see mode to find out what other titles will definitely make it out on that day. I'm sure Microsoft is also in a wait-and-see mode. I imagine there are a lot of very busy people out there right now.
Well, it is. You know, I wonder, Microsoft needs a very strong lineup, though, for the Xbox, because, I mean, Sony is going to come out, and you know they're going to have just ungodly cool stuff coming out with it. And, without no Halo 2 with the initial launch, that seems to be quite I think they should wait until Halo 3, right? They should wait until Halo 3 was ready to go, in my opinion, before Xbox.
I agree.
I know they wanted to beat Sony to the gun. They wanted to get out by Christmas, but without a Halo 3 level title, it seems kind of, I don't know. I mean, it'd be like a Nintendo launching without some sort of Mario title.
And what they've said, and I don't know if this may very well be a smokescreen, it smacks of one to me, but what they've said is they're saving Halo 3 to come out on the same day as the PlayStation 3, that it's sort of the ace up their sleeve to counter Sony's next generation console. You take that as you will, but I agree with you, Brad, that something like Halo would have been a huge asset to them on launch day. None of these other games really do that much for me. I can't imagine they carry that much weight with the more casual gamers who really can decide whether or not a console launch succeeds or fails.
What's the point of buying a console if you don't have the good games to play on it?
Right. Perfect Dark is, I think they're hanging their hat on that, and that's very much sort of an old school game. There hasn't been a Perfect Dark in 8 years or so. I don't know how much cachet that has with people who aren't like me, who've been doing this since they were little kids. For instance, Derek is a great litmus test. Being a sort of a non-gamer who reads up on tech news, Derek, does Perfect Dark do anything for you? Does that name mean anything to you?
Not really.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of people sort of shrug. Yeah, Perfect Dark. What about you, Brad? Are you a shooter guy? Does Perfect Dark do anything for you?
Nothing at all. Because, yeah. I mean, frankly, on a first-person shooter, I mean, how do you compete against the PC? I mean, they got the ATI's just announced the X1000 series this past, yesterday? I mean, I can play the latest, greatest, high resolution, beyond high, 1600 by 1200, which is beyond HD levels on my PC. The for the, I don't know. There's, I'm not much of a console guy, but I know that the titles I would play, they're not, the console games I would play, they're not out for, they're not going to be out in the first generation for Xbox 360.
Right. So for a guy like you, it would have taken something like Halo to really get you to sort of sit up and pay attention. Yeah,
something that really, really shows off where consoles are at their best. And I don't think, I mean, Halo is technically a shooter. It's a first person. It can be played as a first person, but it's, you know, it's kind of a special title. But it doesn't really show off. I mean, most the titles that they're announcing really aren't going to be, in my opinion, that good at showing off what the Xbox 360 can do. And then, of course, like I said, 4 months later, Sony is going to have these titles that I imagine really are designed to show off what the PlayStation 3 can do.
Right.
Well, you were saying before some of the titles that would pique my interest, some of those franchise titles that are coming out for Xbox 360, like Call of Duty 2, Castle Wolfenstein, and Quake 4. Well, hell yes, I want to see Quake 4. I want to see Castle Wolfenstein, too.
And you'll be able to see all of them on a PC, incidentally, which is none of them are exclusive to the Xbox 360, which is, I think, another reason they're a little bit in trouble.
Yeah,
that's good news.
Although I will say that I know some people who are planning on buying the Xbox 360 the day it comes out, simply because they just feel the need to have every single console there is, and you know,
oh yeah, the early
thing.
Adopters, yeah, us guys are we're in, but yeah. Microsoft doesn't care about us. It's guys like, you know, like
it's
Derek
kind of,
and Brad,
right,
and
borderline
the
guys,
college,
right?
Kids,
right?
Yeah.
Borderline guys who, you know, would buy it if there was like some really good game to play, but yeah,
yeah, no, I at this point I'm absolutely underwhelmed by the Xbox 360, and I think it's in a bit of trouble, but I will be there at 4 a.m. in line at a nearby Target or Walmart or Fry's Electronics.
Oh, please don't
just because
say that.
That's, no, I swear. Every single launch, Brad, in the last since the Dreamcast, PS2, the Xbox, that's what people like me do.
That's good, Tom. That's good. You got to get out. You got to get out.
So when someone calls you a camper, they mean it literally.
Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. Well, maybe we can do a special remote recording on the morning of November 22nd.
That'd be awesome.
Remember, one of the things, Microsoft on marketing, they still have a lot to learn on the game side. Remember when we were at E3 and they actually let you look at some Xbox 360 games, except at the time, they were running on like a Mac. And they weren't even hiding the fact they were running on a Mac. And so, obviously, the graphics weren't to full power or whatever, but that was the first impression people got. Then people would leave the Xbox 360 area, go over to the Sony area where they had a private showing with the you know, of course, tweaked demos, and the thing looked, you know, incredible. And you're like, whoa, Xbox 360 looks like a Mac game.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thanks for filling me in on that, Tom. I appreciate it, because obviously I haven't read the actual articles about the 360... I guess I can't call it the lineup, although it's a lineup. It's just not
their
launch lineup.
It's not a launch lineup. Yeah, it's maybe a launch window lineup, not a launch day.
Yeah, yeah, sounds good. Okay, well, do you have a game pick of the week for us?
Yes, the pick of the week, actually. I'd like to be very discriminating with these. So I, in fact, do not have a pick of the week from this week. I've been looking at things as the week they come out, and there are some good things this week. There's a sequel to Black and White, which isn't as bad as the original Black and White. There is a Castlevania game for the Nintendo DS, which is great, but it's merely a Castlevania game. If you're not into that sort of thing, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. But one that slipped by us last week that I'd like to go by and recommend is a PlayStation 2 game, which you might be tempted to dismiss as a kid's game, called Sly 3. And the reason you might dismiss this as a kid's game is it looks very much like a kid's game. You play a fluffy little cartoon raccoon. His sidekicks include a little turtle with a nasal voice who drives around in a jet-powered wheelchair and a pink hippo named Murray. And that's just not really the stuff of earnest adult games. But Sly 3, as the title implies, is the third in a series of sort of stealth action platformers. Think of Super Mario meets Splinter Cell, for instance. And these games are so well done, and they offer such a variety of different gameplay experiences, just charming, enthusiastic, energetic graphics. They have a very broad appeal. It's something, and this is such a cliche, but it's something you could sit down and play with your children and enjoy as an adult, or even independent of children, just completely enjoy. And I would heartily recommend Sly 3. The company's just learned a lot coming along making the three games. This is sort of the culmination of their developing prowess. And even though it might look childish, it is absolutely not. So rather than spend your money on something new that came out this week, I would recommend finding Sly 3 from
last
week.
Well, fantastic. We'll have to check that out, because that one sounds just crazy enough to appeal to me. It can't be normal. It's got to be, you know.
And it is also, forgive me for indulging in stereotypes here, but it is something that I think female gamers can enjoy. Like, this is something I can show my girlfriend, and it's not some silly boy thing with buxom women in chainmail bikinis. It does have a very broad appeal for women. Now, what I'm curious, Derek, as our resident non-gamer, does that do anything for you? A cartoon raccoon?
It's not so much the characters, but the way you describe the gameplay. You know, the characters are just, you know, a pink hippo named Murray and a turtle in a wheelchair. I'll take it.
Right.
I'm like Kristen. It's so bizarre that I have to look into it. I'm interested.
That's refreshing to hear, actually. I'm sitting there playing it thinking, what normal person would want to play this on the off chance that, say, a girl walked into the room and busted them and said, what is this? This is for kids. It does sort of have that, like when I'm playing it, I feel like I'm going to get caught.
Like it's a guilty pleasure?
This is something that my friends would relentlessly ridicule me for playing.
Until they started playing it themselves and realized how good it is. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Just tell them that's the bonus level.
Right.
And the buxom bikini-clad women are actually in the real game.
Yeah.
Well, my excuse that I can use to get away with anything pretty much is, this is for work.
Yeah, there you go.
Because that is my job.
I have to play
so.
This game. Yeah.
Exactly. As long as I say it with the appropriate amount of loathing, then I can get away with playing anything. Yeah.
Hopefully they don't read your reviews where you go out and give it high marks, right?
Yeah, that's true. Then I might be busted for actually enjoying it. Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And it's called what again? One more time?
Sly 3. It's from Sony. The developer is a group of guys called Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch. Excellent.
Good name.
Yeah, I like it. Sold. All right. Well, thank you all very much for joining me this week and helping me keep the podcast going. We're at episode 10, which probably doesn't seem like a lot to some of the veteran podcasters out there, but for us, I think it's pretty good.
10 weeks without a missed episode.
10 weeks without a missed episode, you know, traveling and all that. So in spite of all those things, we still managed to keep going, much to the dismay of some of our listeners, I'm sure. So thank you very much for joining me, Tom, Derek, and Brad. I appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for listening. This podcast was brought to you by neowin.net, wincustomized.com, and quarter2three.com. Support us by subscribing to us on iTunes, Podnova, or Odeo.com. Look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.